Welcome to The Informed Chiropractor, where the art and science of chiropractic care meets the cutting-edge insights of neuroscience. Hello and welcome. I'm Dr. Don McDonald, and it's my pleasure to bring you a podcast dedicated to the chiropractors who are not just about treating pain, but about making a profound impact on the nervous systems of their practice members. Here at The Informed Chiropractor, our mission is to blend the timeless principles of chiropractic care with the revolutionary insights of the polyvagal theory. In every episode, whether it's a deep solo session or an engaging conversation with fellow chiropractors from around the world, we'll explore the practical applications of these principles in real-world settings. From case studies to the latest research, our goal is to empower you to make a bigger, more informed impact on the people that you serve. So whether you're looking to deepen your understanding, redefine your technique, simply inspired to learn how others are making a bigger impact, you're in the right place. Let's embark on this journey of enhancing our practices, our communities, and the lives of the people we touch one nervous system at a time. Thank you for joining me on The Informed Chiropractor. Let's get started. Well, in this interview, I am interviewing Dr. Whitney Willidall from Orillia, Ontario. And he's been in practice for over 15 years. Grown every single year. What we're talking about today is some of the secrets to his success of continually growing over time. We're going to talk about some of his business learnings and some things he might tell his younger self, which is kind of interesting to know about business. And the biggest thing is about the polyvagal theory, what things he's implemented from the polyvagal theory into his adjusting and in his communication, and how that just kind of bolstered his communication and bolstered his confidence in chiropractic. I think you're going to really enjoy this one. Let's jump in. All right. Well, welcome everybody to another episode of The Informed Chiropractor. I'm Dr. Don McDonald, your host. Today, I get to jaunt across the country into Ontario. Our next guest here, Dr. Whitney Willidall. I figured out how to say his name right, so we got that right. He's practicing in Orill, Ontario, and he's been in practice. How many years have you been in practice?
I graduated in 2000, so that makes it easy. This is my 24th year.
24 years, yeah. We got some pretty seasoned professionals in our Informed Chiropractor group, and he always is very great at contributing to the group and is a wealth of knowledge. And I know he's in a season of his life where he wants to kind of work on his leadership skills. And so I was like, hey, let's get him on the podcast to share some nuggets with all the listeners out there. So welcome to the podcast.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right. So Let's start off at the beginning of how did you figure out about this crazy profession in the first place? Like, how did you hear about chiropractic and why did you decide to become one?
I think there was a bunch of steps that got me to here even before I decided to be a chiropractor. When I started in university at Waterloo, I had a few classmates that jumped from like second year kinesiology right into chiropractic. So I think that's kind of just put a little bit on my radar, but I can't even say I was like, oh yeah, that's something I want to do. I was just, you know, oh yeah, okay. It made me aware of it. When I ended up graduating, I started working in a lab at a hospital in London, one of the teaching labs there on nerve conduction studies and EMGs and such. And the nice thing with that was you got to see a lot of people with a lot of neurologic stuff going on. But because we were such a big lab, it took months to get in to see us. So the neat thing was people would come in and say, oh, it took me 2 months to get in for this test, but you know, I'm feeling fine now. And we do the history and stuff. And I'd say, well, you know, what changed? And they'd be like, well, I started seeing a chiropractor. So, you know, my arm's not numb anymore or my headaches have gone away. So we do the nerve conduction studies. And the neat thing with that is, you know, nothing's wrong with them essentially. And they'd be like, okay, yeah, well, I knew that. But, you know, it took me 3 months to get in. So I thought I'd get the test done, but everything's fine now anyway. So that kind of got it more on my radar because I started to hear enough of that where I started to think, not just from where the thing I thought about working in the neurology department at the hospital was it was really neat. We could diagnose a lot of really interesting things. Mm-hmm. But the challenge with neurology is you can't do a lot about a lot of it.
Rated diagnosis. You name it and that's it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, here you go home and live with it type thing. But with the chiropractic thing, I thought that's neat because it's more therapeutic. I want to actually make a difference. I don't just want to tell the person, hey, you've got this and, you know, we can't help you, but I actually want to go, okay, you've got this. This is what can be done. So that, again, took it up another notch for me. And actually, that's when I really started to, you know, look into schools, look into stuff like that. So anyway, my next step from there was I applied to a couple of schools. And at the time, my wife and I, we just had our first son. So I ended up, Toronto wasn't really an option because my wife, who's a nurse, wasn't able to work in Toronto. Nursing jobs weren't really prevalent at the time. Right. So we ended up going to New York, which was a couple hours across the border. And yeah, I
New York Chiropractic College. Now, did you have a chance? Did you go in and go under care yourself at all? Or had you been to a chiropractor before?
Yeah, I kind of skipped over that. But when I was in London, I actually started to attend a chiropractor there. And when I was in, like, once I started to hear a little more about it. And the neat thing with that was I didn't really think I had any problems. So I went in there and it was quite interesting because he kind of told me what I had. I went in with kind of like, you know, I'm healthy. I've got no issues. And he's like, you know, kind of palpating. He's like, what is the matter with your neck? I'm like, well, I don't think anything's the matter with my neck. And he's like, you know, he started talking about things like, you know, do you get a lot of throat infections? I'm like, well, two a year, is that a lot? And he's like, yeah, that's a lot. Like I said, well, I've only had those since I was a kid. I mean, I'm on penicillin a couple times a year. And just breathing issues and stuff like that. Like just, I played every collision sport known to, you know, when I was a kid, hockey, football, everything.
Yeah.
But anyway, I started getting care. And the funny thing with that was, and that's like, I think probably what did cement my I'm going to chiropractic was I used to get throat infections probably twice a year. And I was waiting for my kind of my spring, February, March throat infection to start. And it just never did. And to this day, I've never had another one. So
that's funny.
It did take that little bit to me to go, oh, hey, there's something to this. So yeah. Yeah. Quite interesting.
And we put the disclaimer out, not the chiropractic treated in immune exactly. problems. However, if you properly optimally function your nervous system, often your immune system seems to work better.
Exactly. Exactly. Anyway.
That's funny because like I totally remember that too. You were sick. Being sick was actually just an event that happened. So you just knew it was coming. And and it's funny when it doesn't anymore. And then I was talking to a patient the other day and they were talking about someone with sick days or they're going somewhere and there's someone with a whole bunch of sick days. And I said, yeah, well, you can tell you're not a business owner when I've been in practice for like 27 years and I missed one day and that was just because I wasn't here because we were coming back from a seminar and the flight got canceled. So I physically wasn't here, but some people are just maxing out those sick days, right?
Yeah, exactly. My wife calls them shopping days. She, you know, I said, we hardly take sick days. She goes, it's a shopping day.
No doubt. That's so true. So, well, how was your experience at the school, at the college? Because did you kind of go down and tour it beforehand or you just solely because it was location, it was going to work out better with your wife that you decided to pick that school?
I didn't. I'll be honest with you. I didn't know a lot about the philosophy of schools or anything. It was really more location when I first picked it.
Yeah.
You know, in hindsight, may I have picked another one after the fact, but maybe. I mean, I had a great experience there. And I think it's because I had people around me that we made it a good experience. I had classmates and friends. And I kind of laughed because I said, you know, I got into chiropractic there, but I got excited about chiropractic at the end of my first trimester. And I remember exactly kind of what happened. We were right coming into exams and we had an upperclass person said to me, hey, there's a DE seminar going on in Virginia. So it was about a 6 or 7 hour drive. And he goes, there's a bunch of us. We rented a van. We're going down. Do you want to come? And I was like, what's DE? And he goes, oh, it's, you know, kind of philosophy and stuff. And I said, yeah, sounds interesting. Let's go. It was like $50. It was like a student thing they were doing.
Yeah.
And I said, I remember that my buddies were like, what are you doing? You're crazy. Exams are coming up. You need to study. And I went down there and I remember coming back and studying for exams and talking to my classmates. Like they were like, what happened to you? Cause I was just on fire. I was so excited to be in chiropractic. The studying was a piece of cake. Cause I was just like, hey, we're going to make a huge, huge difference here. And that I got into chiropractic, but after first trimester, I got excited.
Into chiropractic.
Like, exactly. I got into chiropractic. Yeah. Yeah. It got into me, I guess you could say. Right. So I was really jazzed. I was really jazzed about that. And like my wife said that, she goes like, wow, like you're different. So, yeah.
Well, I think it makes it such a huge difference when you get pounded, like excited about something. Like I remember in school, you just kind of get bogged down in all the different studying and stuff. And it's just, you got to take a break and just get excited. There needs to be a nice, like a carrot at the end of that, at the end of that road. Right. So, so how in school, did you have other mentors or did you go to a few more DEs or how did the rest of the 3 years or 4 years roll out?
Well, what had happened, actually, the person who told me about DE was there was a student ICA at the time. And the person who told me about that was treasurer or vice president or something like that, student vice president. So anyway, he told me about it. We went a couple semesters later, he was going off to clinic. So I ended up taking over his position. There was about five or six of us that were pretty close and within a trimester of each other. And, you know, we just kind of took over the student ICA at our school and started bringing in speakers and started. We had a really, you know, back at the time, I don't know if it's still the same, but there was kind of a real ACA slant and a real ICA slant, like more of a mechanical versus a philosophical, bent, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
And our school was definitely more ACA oriented. Our president was president of the ACA.
Right.
So what we were doing and the funding we were getting for, like, we took a group of students to Miami for DE. We went to, I forget, like a few very principled seminars. We had speakers come on campus and there's a group of us that were just on fire for it. And we just really, nothing else really kind of resonated with us. Like, people are like, oh, what are you doing that for? We're just like, man, because we're going
to
make a difference.
Hey, man, you should come to Active Release Club.
Oh, no, yes. Yeah.
Just kidding.
We look like the same. Yeah. But yeah, no, I remember standing up in the cafeteria going, hey, we got a speaker, because we had two cafeterias and we'd have a speaker in one cafeteria, then the food in the other. And be like, grab your food and just come on over. You can sit and eat and listen. And people be like, oh, okay, well, whatever, it's that guy again. But it was just, you get five or six students over and invariably two or three of them will come up and go, that was really good. I'm glad you did that. Let us know when they have another one. And it kind of slowly built a little bit. So yeah, it's kind of nice.
Cool. And then when you graduated, did you you were going to go back home right away?
The funny thing was, no, when we graduated, I remember saying to my wife, we can go wherever we want now. We're not tied to anything. I mean, you're a nurse. You can pretty much practice anywhere. We had our second son while we were in school. So one of our sons was American. One of our sons was Canadian.
Oh,
and
cool.
I said, we can kind of do what we want, really. And so I joked and I said, we can go back home or we can go to Hawaii. where would you want to live? Like, that's all we have to decide right now. So anyway, we ended up going back home.
and it really is where you practice. Is that where you grew up? Is it?
No, I actually grew up in Northern Ontario, like way further north.
Okay.
And my wife grew up in Orillia, so that's kind of how we ended up down here. So
yeah. So when you had it down Hawaii, really just crushed it. Yeah. Like, it was just
yeah. So it's like, family's here, I think that was more the obligation to come back. But yeah, so we moved back to Orillia and that. So yeah.
Cool. And so when you first started, did you just open your own practice or how did you get back into practice?
No, actually what happened was when I came back, I approached Liz Anderson Peacock in Barrie.
Oh,
so
yes.
It's about a half an hour from where we live, half hour south.
Yeah.
And so I approached her, and at the time she was just transitioning from her original office to a new office they'd built. And she was looking to take on an associate in that. So it just timed out perfectly. I said, I'm graduating in July. I can't write my boards until I graduated in June, I guess. I couldn't write my boards till October, I think it was. So I wouldn't get my license till like November, December. And then so I came in, I basically did exams and stuff for her. And then once I got my license, then I started going from there. So
that's awesome. And so that was like, how long were you there?
I was there for about 3.5 years.
Yeah.
And there's myself for the first 2 years. And then she brought on two other associates.
Yeah.
And then at about the 4 year mark, I had enough people because we live about a half an hour north.
Yeah.
And I had enough people in my town that I got to know because I was coaching and doing things like that. And my kids were kind of getting into school age and that they were like, oh, do you practice here? Do you practice here? So I just kind of had that kind of desire in me, like, I should open something up. So I started part-time in another chiropractor's office just as like using the space when they weren't there.
Yeah.
And that just started to build. So I kind of ran with that after 3.5 years.
Cool. And so did you do those two offices for about how long, like for about a year or so? And then you just kind of went full on?
Yeah, probably almost a year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was only doing about 8 hours in Orillia. I was doing like one afternoon, like maybe a Monday or Tuesday afternoon, Thursday morning, Friday afternoon or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But then it started to fill up and then I was just like, I can't, like I'm running out of space here. It was a really tiny office I was borrowing too. Like it was a sardine can. It was really tight in there. And my wife worked the front desk. So
that's great. And it was probably like really low overhead. So it was probably very.
I think it was $200. I paid her $200 a month or something like that. Yeah. And
so
I literally got a key. I went in. I went when she wasn't there. I used it for the few hours she wasn't there. But yeah, it was tight. Yeah.
That's so great. Now, if someone like looking back at it, going like kind of being in one location and moving to the next and having that little transition, was that a good idea? Like looking back on it, do you think that was a nice transition?
It was a great transition.
Like,
yeah.
Just going
to me, you mean going from the associate to the small office and that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and that's who I am. I like controlled build. I'm not a big, hey, let's just build this and then try and make it happen. That stresses me out.
Yes.
I'm a very kind of put things in place and build and, let's go from there. So, and like up to this day, I laugh because I look at my numbers and it just looks like stairs climbing. For the last 23 years, every year's, better than the last. And it's just, that's how I resonate.
Yeah. And I think, again, I've heard this before, and this is actually, I experienced it myself in the past, where you kind of go and get this big overhead and this huge clinic, and then you try to fill it. And yeah. I think it's, that is super stressful. And yeah. if, when I look back, I think that's the best way to do it. And how we are now
your
in practice.
Your story resonates with me. I think that's why I like you guys so much. Because when you talk about, you know, small office, and we got to hear him, like, that's exactly it. That just, you know, completely resonates with what I think too.
Just kind of stair step it up as you go, right? Yep. And keep that overhead exactly. low. And exactly. so when you went from the little sardine can, and then you decided to go full blast there, did you just open up a clinic then that was like separate from that one?
I did. I rented a space from another in an old house. I rented the back half of the house.
Yeah.
And I converted that into an office. So it was probably about 700 square feet.
Yeah.
Just like you came in, I had a little desk in the front, and then you went in, there's a, you know, room here, room there, and a bathroom. And yeah, it was snug, but yeah worked out great.
Actually, efficient.
We were there from 05 until COVID almost. No, from 07 till COVID. So 13
really?
Years I was there. Yeah.
Wow.
And then in around 2016, we bought a building in like down in town near the water.
Mm.
And there was a lawyer in there. So his lease went another 3 years. So we owned the building, but I couldn't come into the building. And literally I said to him, you know, when your lease is up, you're out, I'm moving in. Yeah. And that's where I am now. But the funny thing was, we literally had it all planned out. We were going on a trip, we were going on vacation, and then we were coming back, and that I was going to work Thursday, Friday, my old office, move everything to the new office, start Monday in the new office.
Yeah.
And we came back from our trip in COVID, like we were gone when COVID kind of the whole shutdown started. So I came back to an empty office that like my old office, I'd moved to my new office, and it was like both were empty. And it was just weird.
Yes.
It was like, people don't even know where I am. It was, yeah. So
that's a tough transition, odd. Hey?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So. And so growing in those first, like say 5 or 6 years, what were some of the things that you did to grow your practice?
Lots of screenings. I did I did screenings at the mall in town.
Yes.
Not a very big mall, but I did screenings there. I brought my tables. I brought my posture unit, which is right back there.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, put that up, stood people on it. Showed them weight balances and explained, you know, alignment issues, explained chiropractic. I had my poster with my neurology on it. I had, and just had my spine and just did that. What else did I do? I mean, I think I just belonged to the community. The one thing that my associateship, one of the reasons I think I transitioned, or mostly transitioned, was I didn't feel an ownership in Barrie where like Liz's office was,
right.
Whereas I felt an ownership where I lived.
Yeah.
And that's all I can really say. I love the associateship there. I learned a lot from Liz, but it just, the community, I didn't feel like I was a embedded part of the community, whereas in really I did. And I think just with coaching and stuff, I laughed because I got patients now that, I mean, they've been here for 20 years. I coach their kids. Their kids are like full adults with their own kids now. It's kind of a wild cycle to go through, right? But I remember coaching their kids. I mean, picking them up, tying their skates on them, right? And now I take care of the parents, the kids, and now their kids, right?
Well, and I think that's so funny because a lot of chiropractors are going to be listening to this and they're like, I got to, you know, we got to crank it up or get some more new patients or something. And just simply being involved, like even when I was playing sports, like I'd play basketball, I'd play hockey, like you always start to generate new, like as long as you're going somewhere and you're involved in the community, that's just like automatic marketing just because you're talking about it, right? So
yeah, literally. And they just get to know you, right? And they just go, he's a good person. Hey, what do you do? I'm a chiropractor. Oh, you know, I'm looking for a chiropractor and you're a good guy, so I'll come see you, right?
Yeah.
So kind of just, it does slowly happen. And honest to goodness, I laugh because literally earlier this week, I have this couple I take care of. They're older. They're like really that, you know, walkers and really slow.
Yeah.
And I laugh because I mean, I've taken care of them for years. I can't remember where they came in from. And literally the woman said to me, she goes, oh, She goes, I remember when you were up at the mall. And I'm like, oh my goodness, I haven't been at the mall in like 12 years, right?
Yes.
Last time I did a screening up there. But I just laughed. I'm like, yeah. And I still get people to this day going, oh yeah, I got a, you know, I have your magnet that you gave me when you were up at the mall.
Well, and it's funny because we did the same thing. We did screenings like at a home show or the women's show, and we did all those in the past. And you still get to know people so well. And then you almost have to be remembered that's how you met them in the first place. And so unless you get out there, it's hard. You would have never met those people. So it's important to get out in the community, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think nowadays a lot more people are doing it online because there's like a little less like not as many people are doing as much face-to-face stuff, but I did find that the face-to-face stuff was good because you got a good connection with those
Absolutely.
People.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, people get a better, our generation maybe, but I just think you get a better feel for someone when you meet them face-to-face, you shake their hand, you look them in the eye. That's to me just how it works, I think. So,
oh, 100%. Yeah. The good old business card days, and people now are like, what do you do with a business card? I don't know what that is.
Exactly. It's funny thing is I made magnets up because I always thought magnets, you know, business cards get thrown out. Magnets are in a fridge are kind of cool. So I saw these, even to this day, I have these pictures. Like my last one was my dock with like the flowers my wife puts out in the summer. So we have a nice picture of the dock with the kind of the mist off the water. So every year I do a new magnet and I give those out, and those things are all over the place. Like I see them downtown. If I go into a store, sometimes I'll see them on the store. Or I'll see them like,
oh, really?
We'll be at random people's houses. We'll stop in, you know, visiting friends or kind of a friend type thing. And there's my magnet on the fridge. So, yeah.
Well, the good thing about a magnet is it sticks everywhere. Like a card will just fall on the ground.
They're functional. Yeah. So people keep them and it's got a nice picture. I always put a nice picture. Like I had Florida pictures on the ocean or of like a picture of the mountains or something. And so they're actually nice pictures, so people keep them on their fridges because it's like it's functional and it looks kind of cool.
It'd be a great idea. You could have like your collector's items for every year you're in practice, right?
Exactly. That's awesome. What I thought, like down the road I'll put them behind a thing and put it on the wall or something.
Put all the years back at this is the magnet for this year. Great, that's awesome. So you're in our group and you've been learning a little bit more about the polyvagal theory, and we've been trying to kind of just explain to chiropractors out there listening kind of how you blend that polyvagal theory in with chiropractic principles. What was the first time that you'd ever heard of the polyvagal theory?
That's a tough one. I mean, it would have been through you guys, and I'm not even sure if it was polyvagal or how you described it, but I do remember, and I'm not sure if it was you or Brandy mentioned it, but remember you talked a little bit about kind of, you know, there's like I've always described, and I think a lot of chiropractors are, you know, there's sympathetic, parasympathetic, you know, sympathetic, you're too stressed, and parasympathetic, you're at peace. And
yeah.
And again, as a very basic description, I've used that for years. I just had people, I'm like, you're not stressed, but you're not at peace. You know, like, I don't know what you are, but
you're not vibrating, but you're definitely not well.
Exactly. Yeah. And I remember you guys described that, like there's like a shutdown and I'm like, oh my goodness. Like I can picture like, there's like two or three clients that I just, you know, I'm just like, yeah, that's exactly where they are. Like, they're just this, like, I don't know what's happened. I don't have that deep of a fully understanding, but I'm like, yeah. Like that's exactly where they are. So that really piqued my interest. And I can't remember exactly who said it or where I heard it but that triggered me. And that's when I got reading more about it, listening to more of the stuff you guys talked about. And I can't remember exactly when it was, but I'm thinking, I could picture people as you talked about that going, yeah, that's absolutely the truth.
Totally. And I had the same sort of thing because it was all about that sympathetics and parasympathetics. And it seemed not like, again, people didn't fit that mold and it was harder to explain that. Just kind of like the old, you know, vertebra out of place, squishing on the nerve on the fire hose thing or the hose.
Yeah.
It's a good way to quickly explain it. But then when you're kind of the same way as me. You're kind of a amiable personality where you like to have people understand it and you feel better when people understand it rather than just telling them something and then they follow your direction and do whatever you say. And so like that's exactly the same thing with me, how I kind of really was like, wow. Like, plus just the anatomy of the vagus nerve, it was different than we ever learned that most people are learning now. I know. So that was a huge thing for me.
Yeah.
So out of some of those principles, what are some of the things that have kind of stuck out that you've either implemented in your practice or you've kind of used to kind of look at people slightly differently from going through some of those polyvagal concepts?
Yeah. Two things I'd say. One is when we did the course, you talked kind of about the patterns, you'll see like first rib, diaphragmatic patterns, hip flexor patterns. I love that seminar for the reason being is I saw all those pec. Like you see certain things in people. And when you were describing it, I was like, yes, yeah. Now, your technique about, you know, adjusting and working on them was a little different than mine. And I love that because I'm like, yeah, I'm doing kind of stuff like that. But I wasn't totally sure about why, you know, like I kind of knew why, but I wasn't, that kind of opened a little bit, opened the window a bit more for me. I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Oh, that makes sense too. Yeah, just understanding the physiology. So kind of the learning the patterns and techniques to use to deal with those patterns. I love that. I'm kind of a pattern guy. I'm a biomechanics guy. I love patterns, right?
So, yeah, I'm totally with you on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and it's so funny because, and that's the whole idea too, is that we just want the end result. And so even if people do it slightly different, we're all innately, and again, because we're intuitive with our people, we're actually figuring it out anyway, but we don't know why we're figuring it out. It's just kind of like, we're just doing it because it kind of feels like we should do it. But I do find it super helpful. Even me teaching it, I'm even learning it better because I was doing it so much innately before. But then if you're trying to explain what you're doing to someone else, it's kind of like, you just do it because it's like that. And then it's better.
And some people like that. I mean, that helps people too sometimes. Like, I mean, I'm sure you find that too. Like some people, I don't say anything, I'm adjusting and they're thrilled with that.
Yeah.
And other people, they're, as you're talking, they're, why do you do that? Or what's that for? Why are you doing, you know, they want to, you know, they're, you know,
they're auditory interested. Type
learners. Yeah, yeah. They need to hear something as how they learn. Right. So you kind of, you know, some people are tactile learners. So as you're doing it, they just want to feel what you're doing. They don't really want you to talk about it. And other people are auditory learners. Like, why are you doing that? Like, they're talking. So it's like, okay, you're telling me how you want to be communicated with. I'll give it to you that way. Right. Like what works best for you, you
know,
and they tell you that. So you do that. But yeah, no, just learning some of those techniques, it was great. And I'll be honest with you, the auditory learners, that's probably my weaker point. But that is even improving a lot. And I'll be honest with you, when we talked about, you know, parasympathetic, sympathetic, bone on nerve, you know, again, it's very basic explanations. And I think sometimes people like it. But man, since I've been into the polyvagal and I kind of explain, you know, listen, your body can't be in a state of stress or fear or feeling of, you know, lack of safety and healing at the same time.
Right.
Like it doesn't work. Right. Yeah. Like I said, if I would say, if that door opens up and there's a huge dog there about to attack you, your body's not going, oh, I think it's time to digest this food. It's like, forget that. Let's get out of here. And I said, and if you're in like that all the time, like I said, you're not healing, like you're breaking down slowly. So with that polyvagal kind of lens, it's so much easier to explain that and use those, you know, kind of use those analogies and use those terms. But Brandy's fantastic at that. The analogies that, you know, she makes up or you know, shares is like, yeah, that's a great way of explaining it. So I've tweaked some of those to use and I find people are really, oh yeah, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And so that's, I'm getting more of that, which I like. Cause that means like it's starting to connect with them, not just you have a bone on a nerve and we're going to take the bone off the, you know.
And they're like, well, if you took the bone off the nerve, why do I have to come back?
Exactly. Yeah. So it seems much, much more effective to actually explain, really, this is how your body works. And this is what we're doing, trying to get that, you know, get you able to, you know, function through that much better, much, you know, in a more relaxed state or more peaceful state. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, that's good. That's awesome. And you said the second thing was?
Two things. That was the second thing. First thing was the physiology and how to deal with patterns. Second thing was actually the terminology to explain.
Oh, yeah. So, to explain it. Yeah. 100%. Because like I've realized that too, because I used to go, you know, we said sympathetic good, parasympathetic bad. Now we go danger, bad, safety, good.
Yeah.
So now we still can have the duality, but now it's going to be in the protected physiology compared to the restorative physiology. And then like I said, anyone who understands why they're under care and understands why you're doing what you're doing to them will always be more compliant under care too, because they'll just be like, okay, this makes sense to me. I understand it. And it actually is, I think that lingo is a little bit easier for them to even explain to other people too, because like you can, like people will just explain it with their physiology, like bad, good, bad, good.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, and yeah, that's exactly it. This, you know, when somebody's walking around like this, what do you think? Well, they look stressed. I'm like, exactly. I said, when you're stressed and you're anxious and you're carrying that fear, I said, your body doesn't heal in that state. Like it doesn't, you need the relaxed state. You need the peaceful state. And then like, oh yeah, yeah. So when you're like that, do you sleep well? No. I said, well, sleeping is when your body's healing. I said, that's not good. Or do you digest food well? No. It's like, well, that's because your body's not in the state of, you know, absorbing nutrients and making new cells. It's in a, we need to get out of here. We're not safe. So perfect way of explaining it.
Brings me to another question. So for just sharing your experience, because you've had so much experience and you're quite a good businessman, you've bought into properties and businesses and stuff like that. What are some of the things that you would might like to talk to your younger self about business in a chiropractic business, or something that you've learned a lot about chiropractic business?
Yeah, I've learned a lot of things about business. Some of it chiropractic, most of it outside chiropractic. One thing I think was the big thing. We bought into property years ago, and I learned a lot from that. Not a great outcome at the end. I mean, we did we did well with it at the time we had it, but at the, afterwards, not so much. But I look back on that and I go, and I think the biggest thing I tell myself then is spend more time investing in yourself in chiropractic, even when it's early on in your building, invest in yourself in, you know, maybe some seminars, invest in yourself in reading books, invest in yourself in really getting to that ownership in yourself of what you're doing and how you do it, because that will build up better. When I was a bit slower, when I had, you know, when I was working with Liz and when I had the other practice, we bought a 14-plex.
14-plex.
Yeah. Me and another fella. And yeah, that consumed a lot of my time. And I kind of think it stunted my chiropractic growth, even though like I was, you know, really burning the candle at both ends for a few years there, really trying to get them both, keep them both going. Too many plates in the air, and my chiropractic growth struggled. So I look back and go, yeah, the money I made there, I lost in the fact that I could have probably increased those stair steps growing chiropractic and been where I am now, maybe 2 or 3 years sooner. So,
yes.
You know, and I'm much more pleasant and enjoyable in the office here versus, you know, the 2 a.m. phone call that my, you know,
your renters, you're like, you got to evict somebody because they didn't pay rent. You got to keep your old baseball bat to
kick
all some that kneecaps.
or my whatever's leaking, right? And it always started leaking at 9 p.m., right? Then when Home Depot closed and you couldn't get a part, right?
So, oh, geez.
Lots of that. So,
well, it's funny because, like I said, our histories always line up so much because I was the same thing where I would go into like supplements and then these laser things and like just all these different ideas on how to kind of. I think maybe it's because as a chiropractor, if you don't really know exactly what to do, then you just look outside of chiropractic and don't realize that like the insane power, like as a profit center you have as a chiropractor, like it's amazing. And once you get the skills, like I've even noticed that now is even now teaching technique that like just with my skills the way they are now, like it does make you feel different because now you have a forever skill. That there's hardly anyone on the planet that has that. Mm-hmm. And all you need is your hands. Mm-hmm. And you can help anyone on the planet. And like, absolutely. It's crazy. Isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's insane. And so at the very beginning, I think we don't have the confidence. So we don't realize that we could actually, you like, oh, we've heard other great chiropractors, but they're the other people. It's not us until one day you go, well, maybe I'm not that bad. Maybe I'm pretty good chiropractor.
And literally, I don't know if it felt like this to you, but it almost feels, it's just like, it's like a light switch, right? You're kind of pushing, and all of a sudden it goes click.
Yeah.
And it just seems like you go, hey, I'm the guy that can help this. I'm the guy, you know, like somebody coming in and they're like, you know, pretty severe stuff. And you're thinking, oh, maybe I have to refer them off. Maybe I have to. And now they come in. I'm like, no, you're like, need to be here.
Yeah.
Like you need to be on my table. We're going to do a good thorough assessment of you. We're going to figure out what's going on and we're going to give you hope and we're going to give you, you know, we're going to give you the answers. And, you know, maybe sometimes it does get beyond our scope and I'm going to send you out, but. Man, most times it's not. Most people, you send them out and they come back and it's just a mess. And it's like, no, now we got to get you under. Not happening.
It's so funny because I always think in pictures and cartoons, I always think like in the old days when they're trying to break the sound barrier and like the jet is like almost falling apart and like everything's going to fall off. And then as soon as they hit it, it goes like, makes a big bang. And then it's just like smooth. Yeah. And I'm like, not that your whole days are smooth always, but you just feel
not at all. No,
it just feels like that. It's good, right? So
yeah, it's just that click. I would say, kind of, you get to that point, and man, it's. I tell it to when I have students and stuff come through, and they're like, "What should I get into?" I said, "You know, if you're a leader, if you're someone who wants to, you know, figure things out and do that, chiropractic's great for you. Like you can do really well here, but you know, you got to have that mentality that you can." Run the show and you can figure it out and you can do it. I said, this is a great profession. You'll love it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. So coming to the end of our time, I really appreciate you taking some time out of your day to come and share your message with us. You have chiropractors listening from all over the world. And at the end, I always like you to, like, you know, just, they might be driving to work. They might be having a good day, having a bad day, going to the gym, busting it on a treadmill. Yeah. What kind of words of inspiration would you like to kind of sprinkle over the profession that's listening to this right now?
That's always a tough question. But you know,
or sometimes it's just what's inspiring you right now, because
the amazing thing with this is like I think what you just said, it's a step-by-step process. I maybe if that's not you and you're just like a go full gung-ho at it, you can do it, but I think the way to really progress and see a really successful practice is just take those small steps, like you said, do your, you know, get them to do screenings. You know, now it's probably more Facebook marketing, doing things like that, but talk to people, get out and coach, get out and, you know, meet people in your community and just watch that slow growth and just trust the process and realize that it's going to take a little while. Like you're not going to just be super, you know, I mean, maybe some people are, but for the most part, it's going to take a while to build that sustained success. Yeah. And man, when you get there, when you, like I said, when you start to get that point where that switch starts to click and you feel like, hey, you know, I'm profitable, I'm doing well, and it's growing and people are referring and people are coming back in that I haven't, you know, come and gone. And it's a cool place to be. I tell you, you kind of start to see that sunrise and man, it's a great, like, I love this profession. And I don't say that just because, you know, like it's, I just think, like you said, with your hands, you can do so much, like it's crazy. So much
more than anyone. And, I think,
my son's in medicine right now and he's in ear, nose, throat, like he's in residency and stuff. And I love him and everything. But I said, you know, without like a surgical suite or without a prescription or something, like,
or a whole bunch of equipment,
so much you can do. Yeah. So, I mean, like, you know, whereas we can get in there and palpate and correct things, and man, it's pretty awesome. So
I agree. I think I've just been realizing that too. I'm like, okay, you're stuck on a deserted island and you have a choice to be with a surgeon or a chiropractor.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, I want to be a chiropractor. I want to be with the chiropractor.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So just again, thanks so much for being on the podcast. I really appreciate you taking the time out.
Oh, thanks for having me. I really appreciate that. And we'll see you next week for dinner.
Yeah, totally. Doing our social meetup, which will be awesome. And for all those out there, I hope you guys got some good information out of that. Hope you got a little bit inspired to get a little jazzed up for your next shift, seeing our practice members out at work. And we'll see you again in a couple of weeks. And that brings us to the end of another episode of The Informed Chiropractor. I want to thank you for joining us today and being an important part of this community, dedicated to advancing chiropractic care through the insights of neurology and the polyvagal theory. As we close today's episode, remember that each one of us has the power to make a significant impact on the health and well-being of our practice members. It's through our continuous learning, application, and sharing of knowledge that we can truly elevate the practice of chiropractic and enhance the lives of those that we serve. Before we part ways, I encourage you to connect with us online, visit our website, and follow us on social media to stay updated. Our website is www.theinformchiropractor.com. And if you found value in today's episode, please share it with a colleague or a friend who might benefit as well. Your support helps us reach and inspire more chiropractors to make a greater impact on their communities. It's been a pleasure to be with you today on The Informed Chiropractor. And until next time, Dr. Don out.